evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dang Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, May 17th, 2018. Another round of the High-Level Revitalization Forum opens in Addis Ababa.
We know that a quick fix will not be sustainable. But we also know that if those who think they can drag out discussions in order to position themselves better in a negotiation by killing, will also find the sword of justice reaching them sometime. If not now, it'll happen.
And the SPLA-IO spokesman says they're ready to talk peace, but there is a line in the sand.
Our strategy is to give peace a chance, but at the same time, there are certain compromises that we will not move from.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Talks by South Sudan's various warring parties open today in the Ethiopian capital in another round of the IGAD-sponsored High-Level Revitalization Forum. As representatives of the government, opposition, and civil society work to strike a deal on contentious issues of security and power sharing, international leaders say they're ready to take punitive measures against those who obstruct the peace process. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Kwai Kwati, African Union deputy chairman, says the AU is extremely disappointed by the lack of progress among South Sudan's leaders, and AU leaders are prepared to take action against the any and all violators of the peace process.
It will not be fair for anyone to argue that the African Union decision to take punitive measures against those that kill or contribute to the killing of the citizens every day is unjustifiable. The African Union is going to work tirelessly with IGAD and other partners to punish those who obstruct efforts towards peace, and will do that without fail.
Kwati did not mention what measures the AU is prepared to undertake or when. Regarding the stumbling blocks that have occurred in previous talks, sources in Addis Ababa say the parties are expected to make a breakthrough on governance issues, specifically the structure of the next transitional government of national unity, including the presidency and vice presidency, and power-sharing ratios on the cabinet. But while the government is pushing to keep the number of states at 32, the opposition wants to reduce them to the 10 original states. On security sector reform, the government and the opposition are expected to agree either for integration of rebel forces into the National Army or dissolution of the SPLA, a move the government has rejected. The parties are also expected to agree on clear terms of cantoning the rebels' forces. Alexander Randos is the EU representative at the talks. He says the South Sudanese leaders have no option other than a compromise.
We know that a quick fix will not be sustainable. But we also know that if those who think they can drag out discussions in order to position themselves better in a negotiation by killing, will also find the sword of justice reaching them sometime. If not now, it'll happen.
Brian Suken, representative of the Troika at the talks, is calling on the various parties to accommodate other ideas and a compromise.
We call on IGAD and others in the region to take urgent action to impose consequences against those who have violated the cessation of hostilities agreement as promised. In order to make real progress in the next few days, there will need to be a significant increase in political will and commitment to compromise from the parties represented here today.
The talks have drawn dozens of delegates from the opposition, civil society, and religious leaders. Regional leaders such as Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Sudan, and Uganda are also being represented today. Government spokesman Michael Makwei told the South Sudan in Focus the Kiir administration is happy to have learnt the position of the opposition on the key issues.
We have come back hoping that we'll be in a position to understand ourselves and make compromises in the areas where there is real divergence.
The resumption of the talks comes amid increasing international pressure on South Sudanese leaders to sign a new peace deal. In a White House statement released last week, the U.S. warned the South Sudan government of any unilateral attempt to extend its mandate, whether through the legislature or through its military. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The rebels of the Sudan's People's Liberation Movement, loyal to Riek Machar, say their position at the forum hasn't changed from the one they put forward to IGAD. SPLM-IO spokesman Mabior Garang Mabior says Machar's SPLM-IO faction will not return to Juba if the security of the city is in the hands of the South Sudan Army. Mabior says the army is what he calls a tribal entity and should not be trusted, but his group is ready to negotiate in Addis Ababa.
One of the main issues is the security issue. Of course, the security issue is one issue, and the detention of our chairman is also another issue here. But they are not really positions, because when you're negotiating, you should be flexible. Our strategy is to give peace a chance, but at the same time, there are certain compromises that we will not move from.
What are these compromises that you will not move away from? It looks like you're already putting a roadblock there, Mabior.
The government has been using propaganda and trying to make it seem as if the SPLM-IO is asking for two armies in the country. And the SPLM-IO is not asking for two armies in the country. The SPLM-IO is saying that there has never been a national army and the army has been tribal. So what we are saying is that these tribal militias must be contained, and the issue of security must first and foremost be addressed in the country before any of the other things can be addressed quickly. Because according to the provisions of the agreement, Juba should have been demilitarized. And where the clashes broke out at the checkpoint, there should have been a joint integrated police of both forces. And if that had been followed, then these clashes might not have happened.
Yeah, this was the same position you had last in 2015, because you were saying you don't trust Juba. So you are bringing this again this time around.
But the agreement was not being implemented. This is what I'm saying, that the provisions of the agreement were not being implemented. So to anybody who was following and was reading the agreement, it would have been very obvious that the agreement was in the process of collapsing, you know, because when Dr. Riek Machar is allegedly stuck in Pagak, it is because the number of forces that should have been in Juba were 2,900, around 1,300 came. And when the next group of forces was supposed to come to Juba, the government reneged on those provisions, and the propaganda was presented that Riek Machar is the one who's an obstacle to peace and doesn't want to come, when the reality is that the provisions of the agreement had not been followed. Like I said, Juba had not been demilitarized. The Transitional National Legislative Assembly should have been reconstituted first before the Tigonu was formed.
What is it that the SPLM-IO will do differently this time to get into an agreement with the other various political forces in the country?
Well, I don't want to say much about the other political forces, because we are still engaging in talk with them, you know, and so this is a very sensitive topic, but I can say that there's some certain individuals who have not been very genuine, and I don't want to antagonize the whole group, but there's individuals who sometimes hold the same position, like or hold positions which are closer to the government position than they are to opposition. For example, if we are all in the opposition and you're calling for both Dr. Riek Machar and Salva Kiir to be removed from the political arena of South Sudan, then it makes some of us suspicious that there's a conspiracy somewhere, because some of the opposition groups hold the same position with the government. Some of them have remained in the government even up to today, and it is very confusing.
That's Mabior Garangde Mabior, spokesman for the rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Army, allied to Riek Machar. He was speaking with my colleague, John Tanza, from Addis Ababa. As South Sudanese warring parties meet in Addis Ababa today, the head of the Anglican Church in South Sudan says he too is in the Ethiopian capital to remind the parties to put aside their political interest and consider the plight of the people suffering due to the conflict. Archbishop Justin Badi Arama tells Waki Simon Wudu military victories cannot end the conflict in South Sudan.
I'm here in Addis Ababa as a messenger bringing the voices and pains of the hungry and traumatized widows and orphans of South Sudan to remind our leaders and all the conflicting parties that people are crying for peace. And I'm also here to remind them of the continued blood of young people that is crying day and night from the grounds and soils of South Sudan, that they need peace for the remaining ones. And I'm here also to give the voice of the church on behalf of the voiceless to those who are here talking and trying to negotiate their position, that time has come that they should consider the suffering of their people, not only their positions and their rights.
If there is any message you would like to pass to the warring parties, what would that message be?
Enough is enough. We need peace this month. And this is the right time. We have suffered enough.
What is the impact of this conflict on the church in South Sudan?
The impact is great. Church is the gathering of all people who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. And those believers are actually traumatized. They are in displacement. They are daily and every moment being killed in disarray. And that makes the church to be scattered. So if the people are scattered, which means the church is greatly affected. And those of us in leadership, it makes us also traumatized because you look at your Christians, how they suffer, how they starve, how they live miserably in the displaced camps, in UN protection camps, in refuge, on the streets. It pains us a lot and brings big confusion in our hearts and tempts even our faith because we ask, where is God at this time? But the word of God is clearly that if my people who are called by my name could humble themselves, repent of their sins, I will hear their cry and heal their land.
Church leaders are charged with a prophetic role to remind politicians about injustices in the society. What is the Anglican Church doing to address the war-related injustices in South Sudan?
The Anglican Church and all Christian churches in South Sudan, day and night, they are constantly reminding their Christians, their leaders, that they should embrace the spirit of love, spirit of forgiveness, reconciliation, and unite to bring peace to their people. That is a message that the churches give out every day, every month, since the war started up to this time. That is our preaching.
What is the church doing to convince the leaders of the warring parties that it is time to end the violence in South Sudan?
We have been approaching them and continue to approach them individually in groups that in history of the world, all wars end in dialogue. It is not a military success that ends wars. So if they love their people, before the people finish, they should listen and then come up and then embrace peace. So we have been through different forums, continue to remind them that they should love their people. Though they have opted to continue with violence, to continue to look into their interests, but we will not leave them alone.
That's Justin Badi Arama, the Archbishop of the Anglican Church in South Sudan. He was speaking with my colleague Waki Simon Wudu in Addis Ababa earlier today. A visiting fellow with the U.S. Institute of Peace says IGAD mediators at the forum have a huge task convincing the warring parties to make the necessary compromises during the talks. Ali Virji says inviting the parties for negotiations is easy. The real challenge is persuading the parties to agree on different proposals to end the conflict.
One of the things which is critical to any peace process is momentum. And once you lose that and have to start again, it makes it very difficult to make progress, even if there weren't other challenges, which of course there are. So I think the first point is that because so much time has passed, and in the meantime, there have been further actions such as the SPLM convention and the resumption or at least a reiteration of the Arusha process again for the SPLM. The president has made a number of statements. The situation has also shifted. And so the consequences of a gap also exist just from the outset. Beyond that, I don't know if the mediation from the documents that it has put out is really prepared to play the role of mediation rather than a role of facilitation. The difference being that it's not simply about booking rooms and having people in Addis. It is also about finding a way to bridge the gaps and finding a way to allow for compromise to be reached, not by expecting that compromise to emerge directly from the parties, but by the third party playing that neutral role.
Let's talk about the various positions that have been coming out of Addis. Some members of the various groups were invited by IGAD for a two-day consultation workshop. Could you give us a synopsis of these positions and how they impact on the prospects for peace in South Sudan?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the importance of who is involved in these consultations also has to be looked at. That I think it's unfortunate that there weren't other consultations made after all of the talk about inclusivity. It was important to reach beyond the armed actors, and they weren't necessarily all present. But leaving that aside, to answer your question, I think it's pretty clear from the positions that were shared there that there are big gaps on basically all of the central issues. But the question is, even if you could resolve some of those things, so for example, the government is talking about increasing the number of ministries or the increasing the number of ministers, deputy ministers, creating a new vice president, for example, even if those things were agreed by everybody, would that resolve the underlying issue? I'm not sure it would. And so in some ways, the discussion or the disagreements about issues that are actually not central to resolving the underlying problem is also part of the challenge here. So it's what is missing from the positions and not only what is in them.
What are these underlining issues? Let me use your words.
Well, I mean, for example, just to use the example of the text here, in these positions, there is a question of federalism, right? So that one of the things that it says, or one of the things that the positions articulate, is that the incumbent government rejects the immediate introduction of a federal system, whereas the SPLM-IO says federalism should begin during the transitional process, and there's a similar position for some of the other opposition groups. And yet at the same time, as we know, the government has gone ahead and created 32 states. Now, you might not call that federalism, but it is a change. It is a decentralization of power from the 10 states. At least that's what the government presented it as. And yet we know that the potential for disputes at the local level because of boundaries, because of whether these states function or whether they are really just states on paper, is a real one. And so that's an example of where the formal process does not match up with the situation on the ground. Another example might be with respect to the armed groups and what to do with them. So there's a discussion about whether there should be some kind of cantonment process or integration process, how long it should take, and so on. And yet we know that across the country, there's a proliferation of armed groups, some of which are fighting more consistently than others, some of which hold territory. Telling them that, you know, you have to do this within 30 days or 60 days isn't necessarily going to solve the reason why those people took up arms to begin with.
That's Ali Virgi, a visiting fellow at the USIP here in Washington. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Washington yesterday. Tomorrow, Virgi talks about the bargaining problems at the forum. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. President Kiir lashes out at corrupt police officials. We'll have details on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you feel loved and appreciated?
Even when most time I do something good and people praise me, ask someone, I like that thing you did. And that most time makes me feel good.
What makes me feel loved, it's internal. I hardly have somebody who, you know, makes me feel loved. Although I would say my parents inspire me and push me on, but they have a strange way of doing it. Most time it's through criticism. When you are criticized, it spurs me up.
When actually people have concern about me, because there are different languages of love. Okay, some people do appreciate the word aspect of love. Some people, spoken words per se. Some people it is gift. So, but for me, what makes me feel love, like I said earlier, is when people care for me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. President Kiir lashed out at South Sudan's soldiers and police for killing civilians and being corrupt. Mr. Kiir blames soldiers and police for the worsening insecurity across the country. David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
He's speaking at the start of a three-day police leadership conference in Juba today. President Kiir accused soldiers and police of being responsible for the rising crime rates in Juba and in other parts of the country.
A good example has been set a few days ago when a pastor was killed with his wife and another pastor wounded. I don't know whether he's alive or he has also followed them. And the criminals who did this are men of the security forces. You are the custodian of the law. If you are seen by the civil population that it is you who are supposed to protect them, that have turned against them to kill them and to rob whatever they have, then other people can decide to run away so that they go and live as refugees. If they cannot be protected by their own security agents, this is not good. They are by daytime, you are soldiers, and at night they are criminals.
President Kiir, who is the commander-in-chief of the organized forces, accused senior police officials of being corrupt, and he accused top police officers of filling police payrolls with ghost names.
I'm sure the ghost names come from you, the senior officers. Your pay is not what you are now getting. It is the ghost names who are being paid, and they are collected by your agents in the police forces or in the prisons or in other organized force. Let us really address the issue of the ghost names. The ghost names are that they are receiving salaries in all the departments of the government. And you will agree with me that, you know, somebody who is a sergeant in the army comes to you here and take a pay of first lieutenant or captain. So if one person can go to 5-7 departments receiving salaries, what do you think will happen? Now, these are the reasons why our economy is sinking every day.
Aside from including ghost names on the payroll, Mr. Kiir says police officials are also recruiting their wives into the police with high ranks. He says these wives later remain inactive. None of the police commissioners attending the conference denied or admitted the president's accusations. The conference brought together 32 state police commissioners. For the next 3 days, they will be providing reports on the security situation in their states and suggest a way forward in curbing crime in the states. President Kiir says his government is working to reform police procedures. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
The World Health Organization says the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has reached a city, raising fears of a wider spread of the deadly virus. The new case was confirmed in Mbandaka, city of more than 1 million people in the northwestern province of Equator. Mbandaka is about 150 kilometers from the rural area of Bikoro in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the outbreak was detected earlier this month. With the Ebola scare so close, the World Health Organization and South Sudan health officials say they're putting in place surveillance measures along the country's border with the DRC to prevent the virus from reaching South Sudan. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba, officials say they will screen all travelers entering South Sudan from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Health Ministry and WHO officials here say they are on high alert to counter any suspected Ebola outbreak in the country. This comes more than a week after an Ebola outbreak was reported in Bikoro in western DRC, some 3,000 kilometers from the border with South Sudan. Officials say more than 20 people have died so far in the DRC, and as a result, South Sudanese and WHO officials are taking no chance. The Ebola virus disease, or EVD, is caused by a severe infection with one of five known Ebola virus species, four of which can cause disease in people. It is fatal in humans and other primates, such as monkeys, gorillas, and chimpanzees, and the disease has no cure. South Sudan Health Minister Dr. Riak Guy-Kok told reporters in Juba today his ministry is updating the country's Ebola contingency plans by strengthening its readiness to counter any outbreak of Ebola that may come to South Sudan.
Although there are no suspected Ebola cases reported in South Sudan yet, the Ministry of Health is on high alert. In collaboration with the WHO and partners, the Ministry has stepped up prevention and preparedness measures that were already in place.
South Sudan borders the DRC on the western side of the country, which puts it at a high risk of an Ebola outbreak. Guy says his ministry will carry out awareness campaigns to educate people and ensure they remain vigilant.
Surveillance officers at points of entry have been alerted and supported to enhance surveillance and early detection of cases. In addition, social mobilization and risk communication messages and materials are being prepared to enhance public awareness and sensitize the community to report all rumors and suspected cases.
Guy says officials have pre-positioned emergency kits in areas close to the DRC border so that health workers can quickly respond and investigate any suspected Ebola cases. Dr. Evans Liosi, the WHO representative in South Sudan, says the best way not to get infected with the Ebola virus is by creating awareness about what to do and what not to do when there is the suspicion of an Ebola outbreak.
We have to take every measure to ensure that our borders are protected and the people know what to do, and we are prepared to deal with any suspect, and the people know how to report suspects if there is any. So normally you get by getting direct contact with an infected person of fluids, and when they are bleeding and you also get in touch with bleeding, you get infected. And if there is also a dead person who might have died because of Ebola, during that period of burial, sometimes there is washing, people getting in touch with the dead bodies, this also spreads.
Although the Ebola virus has no cure, patients who are provided with early intensive supportive treatment and care, especially fluid replacement therapy, who are carefully monitored by trained health workers, have a chance to recover from the illness. Ebola causes sudden onset of high fever, extreme tiredness, headache, body pain, and unexplained bleeding in advanced stages. The disease has killed thousands of people in West Africa areas of Liberia and Sierra Leone in previous outbreaks. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Teresa by the Ndogo group from Western Bar Kazal. I'm Ayandeng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. What do you think about our show? You can let us know on the web at SouthSudan@voanews.com or find us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.